Dear Venerable Sisters and Brothers, Dhamma friends, we are going to start the question and answer session today. We'll start with the written question and we'll invite Halakon to present the questions already written and presented.
First question. Venerable Bhante, thank you for taking my questions. One, you said sitting in meditation can vary from person to person as long as the body is symmetrical. Please explain what qualifies as symmetrical. I sit on the floor mats, but often I have one leg bent at the knee and the other leg extended outward, not directly forward, but somewhat to an angle. Is this an improper way, and will this affect the energy created in the body from meditation? I have one hip that has much discomfort, and this is why I find it difficult to bend that leg. Please help me find a solution. Please don't suggest that I sit on a chair. I feel more connected when I am sitting on the floor. Also, is it okay to use incense during meditation? If so, what kind of incense? I remain respectfully yours, Venerable Bhante. Thank you so much for all that you have taught us.
So, as far as sitting is concerned, that whether you are sitting on the ground or on a chair, ask your body after sitting whether it is comfortable. When you are sitting in an awkward way, that asymmetric, then it is naturally... it is quite natural to assume that it is uncomfortable. So once you adjust your body after taking a sitting posture, just close your eyes and feel it. If you feel comfortable, that's a very good starting point. And this is talking only the starting point. So more and more practice, you may learn fine tuning and fine details. The consequences to the continuation of the sitting. Just make the starting point is comfortable. The incense also, it depends. If you feel you are absorbed and you are mindful, and whatever the thing, the amount of light, amount of the aeration, the way are you, how you sit, everything is just to make your mind is inside or mindful. So all these things are variables, can affect in different ways. So there are no hard and fast rule. The simple answer is consult your body knowledge. Start with this comfortable start. That's all we can do as beginners to start with. And later when you continue with meditation, you may find some other fine details. So sit symmetrical. And without incense is much better than incense. So if you feel some kind of incense is conducive for you to be mindful, that's okay. Otherwise, depend with the least amount of external aspects, then you become much more independent right from the beginning.
Dear Bhante, this morning I encountered anger when I started the first walking meditation. This anger thing was substantial and I could not focus on the body or on the breath. I knew where it came from. It came from a little incident which hurt my ego. It didn't matter. It was solid, moist and hot. I felt heat and moist through the out-breath. Because I couldn't concentrate, I decided to sit down and watch the anger until it disappeared. It didn't disappear until I sat down for sitting meditation. Again, I watched the anger and it was losing power halfway but stayed. What is the best practice for unarisen anger not to pop up or to restrain it right before it pops up?
After the World Trade Center collapse, there was a conference, Man and Life meditation, and they write destructive emotions, 7 destructive emotions. The one book is on the anger written by Thurman. In his preface, he starts, "I will never angry with my anger in future ever." So don't get angry with your anger. It's a part and parcel of your life. So when it happens, if you get angry with the anger, then you find a way out. But if you consider this is part and parcel of the life, when and where it happens, ask the anger to come and sit in front of you, have a cup of tea, and have a nice chat. I ask for green tea. Have a cup of green tea, because occasionally it comes. When it comes, you have to associate from the beginning through the middle to the end. And as far as you are not angry with the anger, it's a good amusing thing. The full of knowledge. Without anger, no knowledge. So let it happen. And if you can see halfway through, that means even without my advice, you are better off. So let it happen. Don't consider it is something abnormal. It's a part and parcel. So therefore, make a determination not to get angry with the anger. Then that is the best answer. There's a very nice sutta, Kodha Bhashaka Sutta. The Buddha explained how not to get angry with the anger and then get the upper hand.
Dear Venerable Bhante, while I was breathing meditation in sitting position, I felt like I was distracted and some thoughts came to my mind like in a dream. Maybe some random thoughts, but I thought to report it that it has some message. A large group of tiny little men were working in a field like slaves. At the end of the day, they were waiting in a line to get their food plate. They were happy to go through all suffering throughout the day as they can get food at the end of the day, and they didn't know any other way. Somehow I got the access to the kitchen store where I can have all the food I need and all the pleasures as much as I need. Are we trying to find this key through meditation? Second vision was, with every material object we are chasing, there is a little tag attached to it. It says, "This is mine, I got it." This is a feeling people are actually chasing for this little tag, not the material object. When we get this tag, we get happiness. So if we can get this tag without the actual object, still we get the same happiness. This looks deceiving, but anyway, we have been already deceived. We never got happiness by possessing some material object, but only by possessing this little tag.
So these are the way that we are, our language is through the symbols and the epithets and the visions. So when that happened, that does not indicate it is just insignificant. There may be some message, but the thing is, it make you eccentric, it make you unmindful. So more you take the taken away by the content of the message, so much so you are not here and now. So understanding this lucrative nature make you eccentric, you see the tricky nature of the mind. So therefore, when and where it happens, if you get caught up with the content, utterly you are unmindful. So therefore, how can you be alarmed to say, now I am in an unmindful situation, to just simply come back to the primary object and be mindful? That is the most important message. Whenever anything appears interesting, attractive, dramatic, that everything make you eccentric. You have to simply come back to the primary object, not by hating them or not by indulging them. So the middle kind of approach, they have a message. If they have the message, they will convey by repetitive recurrence. So don't worry about that. Just see your ability to come back to the primary object and to be here and now, so much so your stream of consciousness is free of defilement. Otherwise, you start storytelling, you start fabrications, you start content, getting involved with the content, so you will be carried away by this thing, and ultimately you will be wandering. So therefore, cut that story as short as possible. That must be your approach rather than entertaining the content of the vision, content of the thing you see.
Dear Venerable Bhante, I have a fear of seeing ghosts. So I try to avoid being in dark nights alone. I think this started hearing ghosts and yakka stories discussed by my mom and her friends in my childhood. Also, I watched Dracula films in childhood. 2 weeks ago, I saw a ghost in my dream so vivid that I got up screaming. I got goosebumps when I remember that dream. This fear disturbs my meditation sometimes when I do alone. When I feel alone and the fear comes breaking my meditation, your valuable advice is appreciated. Sadhu, sadhu.
Don't go in front of a mirror. You will see a ghost. Then the end of the whole story. Remove all the mirrors in your home. That will be one way out. Because in Nilambe, that was a lay meditation center close to my hometown, there was a cartoon drawn and written. It says, whenever you see your real nature, you will start running, telling that you have seen a ghost. More and more you to see, who am I? Just nothing but a ghost. So therefore, don't look at yourself, don't look at the mirror, don't look at the reality. Reality is always a ghost. So don't try to see it outside. Whenever it is happening, see, this is myself. This is who am I. So have the faith, have the precepts, have the mindfulness. These are the three pillars. Whenever you get disturbed, have faith on Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. And have faith upon your own morality and the sila, and then try to be mindful. So whenever you see ghost, nothing but you see yourself.
Dear Reverend Bhante, please help me to clear a doubt. I understand that mindfulness has a spectrum of strength. I have low mindfulness. I am just understanding the importance of it. After a good walking meditation, I sat down for breathing meditation. After a while, I noted the phenomena passing away. Object, first object, primary object, and the secondary object. Thoughts, space, etc. I did not notice much of arising of phenomena. It was for a brief period of 30 minutes. I felt some relief after that. I felt this may be what I need to see with mindfulness. With later sittings, I did not have this experience. Could this happen with low mindfulness that I have? Could one experience such a phenomena without moderate or high mindfulness? Appreciate your sympathy for us. Sadhu, sadhu.
So whenever someone understanding one's own low mindfulness, is it happening through mindfulness or lack of mindfulness? That is to say, whenever someone to understand that I am not mindful, is it a sign of presence of mindfulness or absence of mindfulness? If the particular person can give me the answer, that will reveal the situation. Otherwise, very difficult to answer the question. My question again, whenever you report you have low mindfulness, it is a result of your mindfulness or lack of mindfulness? Without that, very difficult to give comments. So keep on practicing and try to see, whenever you see your lack of mindfulness, is it a sign of or result of your mindfulness, or it's a result of lack of mindfulness? Keep that in your mind and then keep on practicing. Whenever you find the answer for this question, your balance of the question also will be answered. So therefore, practice further with this advice in your mind, be prepared, then you will be proceeding.
Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you for coming to...
Wait. He's ready to answer, I think.
Bhante, like I think it's not mindful, like low mindfulness is like when I hear the...
You have to speak to the mic directly, otherwise we can't hear.
Well, the spectrum of mindfulness is like when I hear the answers from in this stage, like there are different answers. So then when I compare that, different spectrum of mindfulness, like each one.
You have to talk to the mic, please. Be mic-ful or mindful. Yeah.
I think the mindfulness has different spectrum, like a strength. Some people have very low, and some people have like middle, and some people have high. Like it's depend on like different experiences, I guess. When I see where I am, I think it is low mindfulness. So my question, I think it is clear to you.
My question I'll redefine. Understanding that I am a person with low mindfulness, or understanding that I am a person with high mindfulness, or understanding my mindfulness is a medium, is it a result of mindfulness or lack of mindfulness?
Result of mindfulness. I think it is a result of hearing to different answers.
No, different. I am asking, when you try to be mindful only, you see your weaknesses. It is not a simple mindfulness, it's a power of mindfulness. It's a high performance of mindfulness. It is showing weakness, but it's a function of mindfulness.
Okay.
So therefore, you have to promote mindfulness. Don't afraid or don't get... develop kind of fear to the result of mindfulness. Result of mindfulness is anicca, dukkha, anatta, always negative. But mindfulness is progressing. More and more you become mindful, you see the impermanent nature, you see the suffering nature, you see the beyond control, so therefore still you are mindful. Very nice example given by the commentary. It says, as a monk living in a temple nearby the road, and there is one vendor selling bowls, begging bowls, and that monk says, "I need a bowl." So he come and show you different the varieties of bowls. Say, "You select whatever you like. I will give the price later." So he select one, and he said, "This is nice shape and all the kind of thing." And how is that? He says, "Okay. $100, for example." Now it is, deal is almost finished, and while he's observing very clearly, and he finds in the edge there's one hole, not properly welded, and then he says, "Now, you see there's one hole there." Then he says, "Yes, sir, there's a tiny one, so we'll compromise to $80. Okay, now we go turning again and find another one. And he says, "Now you see, I like this." And now he says, okay, $70. And he finds another one. And then he says, "What do you say?" Okay, $60. So at that level, the commentator is asking, seeing holes or seeing weaknesses is a good or bad for the buyer?
I think it is good.
So meditation also, more and more you practice, you see your weaknesses. But the mindfulness is catching. If you are going to say mindfulness is paralyzed or mindfulness is weak, that is your wrong interpretation. That's your negative interpretation. Mindfulness is okay. It is showing that you are sometimes fully mindful, sometimes half, sometimes fully. This is clear or immediate observation. You must be ready to understand it. Don't attribute that as a weakness of mindfulness. Rather, you have to say it's the efficiency of the mindfulness or power of mindfulness. Then you know how to foster it. Then you know how to facilitate the mindfulness. Otherwise, whenever negative happens, you think, I am lack of mindfulness, lack of concentration. I am a lack of spirituality. I am full of weaknesses. This is the way you interpret in the wrong way. So you must understand how to put things in a positive way. That is what the Buddha mentioned in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, very famous among the Theravada meditation. Karaniyam attu kusalena yantam santappadam abhisamiccha sakko. First and foremost quality for a yogi, out of 14 characters, sakko. Sakko means positive thinking. If you have a negative thinking, whatever meditation appears like something, your own weakness. So therefore, if you attribute that weakness to the mindful, it's detrimental. It's a very, very wrong way. So therefore, see it as a quality of mindfulness, power of mindfulness, efficiency of the mindfulness. You try to see the weaknesses. So don't undermine the mindfulness. Promote mindfulness. Ask the mindfulness to show all the weaknesses. That is the kind of positive way, positive approach. So without getting your feedback, very difficult for me to analyze situation. So therefore, I am used to ask this question. Whenever you feel bodily pains, whenever you feel wandering and daydreaming mind, whenever you become disturbed by sounds, is it a product of mindfulness or distraction for the mindfulness? I used to say it's a product of mindfulness. That is, you are sensitive. That is why thoughts have become more prominent now. That is why the even tiny sounds become irritating. That's why even the normal pains become amplified because of your mindfulness. So therefore, you have a reason to be glad there. Reason to be happy. And if you do not know that game, you are a self-torturing kind of a person. You must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Even if you see your weaknesses, you say, ah, it's well and good. My mindfulness is a good servant. It's showing me, expressing it. So likewise, so if you take it as a mindfulness, now you have to ask your question. What is the question now?
The question is like I told.
You what?
No.
Now you are a different person. You have to rephrase the question.
The question is like the phenomena I saw is like when the phenomena are passing away, like it are passing away like successively, and. And actually, I was not in those things passing away, I have to do don't do. I don't have to do anything because all the things are coming and passing away. So so I got the feeling like, okay, this is what we should do. Look at we should do with the mindfulness, and is this the thing that?
So you have to find ways and means to support mindfulness. It is in a very hard, difficult task now. So you have to give the full backup, full support to the mindfulness because it is showing all the characters. It is in full-fledged action. So always grateful, heartfelt, thankful, and give the conducive conditions and the facilitation for the mindfulness to grow. So therefore, now you know what to do. Okay, thank you for
thank you
presenting
much.
Yourself.
Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you for coming to Chuang Yen Monastery to teach. I hope you will return again. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. My final question is about pain. In the floor-seated position, leg pain is so intense after 20 minutes. I try to look at the pain parts as you recommended, quality, pinching, stabbing, etc., with the mind of now hate.
Now and here.
That's it. Now and non-hate. Thank you.
Non-hate.
Non-hate, yeah. But the pain seems to laugh back at me and intensifies till all the mindfulness is lost. I am able to sit in a chair much better. Should I just sit to the chair, or is it better in the long sense to work with the pain instead?
You have to use it in the strategic way. Whenever mind is very confident and facing, take a seat on the ground and try to be 1 second more, 1 split second more with the pain. Whenever you find that you are not enough immunity, take the chair. Then the mind is more to the concentration. Whenever you sit in the ground and working with the pain little by little, that means without non-hate and understanding the natural characteristics, it's painfully slow, but it is advancing. So don't self-torture, just in a such a way or in an appropriate way, both use both to help each other, help in the reciprocal way.
Day 9. I am sitting meditations. In my sitting meditations with the breath as my primary object, my mind soon goes to quiet, calm state. Also, it goes to secondary thoughts, events, but eventually goes back to calm state without noting. Based on your instructions, I allowed my mind to move back and forth from calm to secondary of events without discrimination. I realize sometimes my mind stays in secondary thoughts for some amount of time, significant, before it goes back to the calm state. Appreciate your advice. Thank you.
If that particular person also can give some feedback, it will be really enlightening to the discussion. My request is, when it is coming from the distraction to the calm state, is it happening with your voluntary involvement, or is it happen involuntarily as a habit? Which way the letter indicates, the written thing indicates happening automatically. So can you give little bit of information the way back home from the distract mind to the primary object or calm state? If you can give some elucidation, that will be very, very juicy, very, very sappy for the others to understand.
Mind comes to calm state automatically.
Not clear.
Mind comes to calm state automatically without noting. So I realize it's not in the calm state. So it stays there for some time, and I do not know how it comes, but it suddenly moves back to calm state.
So basically it says it is happening automatically. Do you think that very automatic coming back is a gift, or it's a product of your past experiment, past meditation? Or that means something you earned by your past experiment or a meditation, or it is the natural thing?
I do not know exactly how to answer. I feel like it comes naturally.
Okay, to make it more clear, when it come back to the calm state, do you feel regret, or you feel neutral, or you are happy? Regret, thinking that my mind is wandering off, you can be regretting. And the natural coming back may be a reason to be glad. Or neutral, what is the state when you come back to the primary object?
I don't feel any difference. I think I feel neutral.
Yeah. So if it is neutral, the going out made no defilements. Because before going, you are mindful. After coming back also, you are mindful. In between, whatever the thing happened, your stream of consciousness is pure. This is the way to make the defilement null and void. We can make sure before the defilement or before the wandering and after the wandering, if the state of mind is calm and quiet or mindful or neutral, that means in between there is no defiling, no defilement. So you are learning the art how to make defilements null and void. It starts with very tiny particles, and later you can understand, to expand it, whatever the thing happen, if you regret, it's a defilement. If you are not regretting, you have a better chance for you to look forward and see the next moment as a crispy, fresh, new thought moment. The regretting is the main thing, torturing ourselves or burning ourselves. So we have to understand we are really, really self-critical. We are really, really inferiority in complex. We are always happy to torture ourselves, and sometimes we think that is as our moral responsibility. That is what I call all bullshit, but I am sorry. I have to use these terms because then only you understand, otherwise you sleep in the midday. So when you come back, you see that something happened, but I am not regretting. I am catching up with mindfulness with the next thought moment. So thing happened, so gone and gone, forever. Nothing to worry. So now learn, understand, to use the mindfulness in order to get rid of or nullify your regrets and kind of thing. So this is an adventurous thing. You can again and again you can use it. But don't make it an excuse to do mistakes. I never proposed that. Whenever something happens, if you come back home and verify, yes, my mind is calm and quiet, it is neutral. And it's coming back also happening naturally. And that coming back, the habit, is the root cause of moral shame and moral fear. That is the root cause or the initial signal, sign of the healthy shame and the healthy fear. Mind itself knows this is not secure. This is not a good place. It naturally come back to the secure place. So ultimately, the Buddha mentioned, if you develop mindfulness up to that level, and if you appreciate, if you refi, if you verify it, even at the deathbed, even your death happened in the complete upset mind, the mindfulness select and bring you to the secure place, even at the deathbed. So therefore, while in the living, while in the calamities and distractions, you have to let the mind pull to play in the tiny roles, and ultimately you learn that whenever mind become unmindful, so to say, or wandering, daydreaming, don't worry how quickly you can come back at home. And when you come back at home, if you feel neutral, if you are not regretting, that is something you earn in this very life. It is not given by your parents. It is not you learn by your classrooms. It is nothing happened, nothing given by from your textural or theoretical understanding. It's by trial and error. So this is the thing you have to promote. Then, if you understand the situation in this context, the wandering mind is a blessing. More you wonder, you can verify, you know how the art of nullifying your defilements. Let the mind to play hell. Let the mind to send kites. No problem. When you come back, if you know how to verify it, how to accept the return journey back to home, and make sure you are not worrying, and that is something you have earned, so you have to promote it as much as possible, so each and every distraction appear like a blessing in disguise. You have to understand. So this is the way I would recognize this as an adventurous thing. It is something hobby-like thing. It is like sporty. It's a very sporty thing. Let the mind to run as it is, whatever may be, and whenever possible, bringing her back home. You know your reference point. You know your benchmark. You know your pure land. You know your undefiled state. Bring it here and check if it is not distracted, if it is not regretting. Consider this as your skillfulness. Thank you.
Dear Bhante, I want to report my experience on sitting meditation this retreat. Primary object is body posture. Now, Soon as I settle down to meditation, I feel a sensation of a blunt object hitting at the base of the skull, or sometimes it feels like a gentle nudge. Soon as I feel this sensation, I am in an empty, no, full space. This space is hard to describe. Best feeling is it has a fluidity to the space. I have no feeling of my body, but feel like I can move in it. After a while, this experience arising and falling of abdomen, or sometimes in breath. This in-breath comes after a small jerky feeling, and it is short and quick. After this quick, short in-breath, I can see the out-breath moving out slowly, smoothly, and gradually. This experience is very different from the experience I had nearly a year ago. That time, I felt out-breath was trying to forcefully pulling away from my body. Excruciating pain started in my stomach, and my internal organs were squeezed and wrung. This feeling spread to my chest and felt very frightening. I remember saying, let go to the breath, but instead I took a gulp of air through my mouth. When I opened my eyes, my fingers were grabbing the meditation cushion and hands had a calming appearance. Once I closed my eyes, natural tendency of breath was to follow the same suit. Same tendency lingered for a day or so, and I forcefully suppressed this experience and just sat on the cushion. Now I cycle through meditation through this gently moving away phenomena of breath, and sometimes there is a break in the mindfulness. And then I say, I am here and now, and regain the mindfulness. Once a wise monk said to me, sit there and do nothing. Pattale bandagena balagena inda. I am still doing it, and this is what is happening.
As I gather the picture, I try to paint the early part, the canvas upon which phenomena taking place. The latter part of the essay says the phenomena, or the what is happening in there, what is the picture depicted on the canvas. So there are two things in the same, the canvas and the painting. The canvas is the base upon which painting happened. So whenever you go and assume your sitting posture, you feel, I am here, I am not dead, I am not unconscious, I am not sleepy. That's a kind of a canvas. And upon which, rising and falling, pains, sounds, thoughts dramatically come and go. So it is like a seashore. You see the horizon, or you see the breaking waves, like two things happening, and your attention may jump in from the canvas to the painting, or painting to the canvas. But if you can make sure whatever it happens, you are mindfulness is intact, you are progressing. So make sure, whether you see the canvas or whether you see the painting, whether you see the breaking waves or whether you see the horizon, you are mindful. That means you are not hallucination. You are not in a daydreaming. You are not in the fantasize. It is happening. So when and where you see you are to see the canvas, when and where you are to see the horizon, it is boring. It is monotonous. No action. So mind sometimes take individual activities like the painting, but that is sometimes torturing. And again it come back to the canvas. Again come back to the picture. So likewise it can change. So till it become boiled down, it appear like a shifting of paradigm, but understand it's a two sides of the same thing. And one more and more you practice this dramatic things, the paint will be blur. You may be more with the canvas, or you may be less and less interested in the waves, but you are with the horizon like. So till that happen, the unpredictability or uncertainty happen, but there is no other way. You have to go prepared. Even though it is shifting from one to the other, if it is within the mindfulness, it is within the context of here now I am, nothing to worry, please continue with the confidence, or in the sense go prepared, and then you may master it quickly without carrying away by the doubts.
Dearest Bhante, in today's talk you said what one must do is to do nothing. This came as a tremendous relief as I struggle with doubts about my meditation practice. When I sit down, I am aware of my in and out breath inside my nostrils, but this only lasts a very short while. And then there is a strong electricity around my head, a pulling upwards at the top of my head, and no breath, no thoughts, nothing. The sounds in the hall become quite distinct, as if time has slowed down to a crawl. I sit like this, and then doubt arises, and my inner voice tells me I should be watching the breath. I look and look, but all there is the pulling upwards on the head. The distinct sounds which occur around me and nothing that even indicates breath. After many sits like this, I start to wonder if I am wasting valuable time. So once again, to do nothing and just observe what is there is okay and beneficial. I was on a retreat where I was told to take each aggregate, eye, nose, ear, thought, feeling, and report, this is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself, this is impermanent, this is unsatisfactory, this is selfless. To do nothing but be open and observe seems much easier to do, but will the wisdom come this way? Thank you for your patience, your instructions is appreciated.
To start with, you have to understand the doing nothing game start not right from the beginning. Once you gain certain amount of mindfulness, certain amount of concentration or one-pointedness only, you can let the mindfulness to run the show. That is, I would say, putting into the autopilot. So right from the beginning, you can't do it. One day, I went to the cockpit and asked the pilot, telling that in the Dhamma talks, I am talking about the autopiloting and all the kind of thing, can you please demonstrate? So he practically, we were in the very high air, and he explained everything. He says, I am the captain, 2 co-pilots are there. It's a long journey, and first, till the plane off the ground and up to the 100 meters, I have no rights over the permission to put into autopiloting. Completely, I must control the plane. All the staff and everything must listen to me because it is still uncertain. So once it is taken off, after 100 meters only, you have option either to put into the autopiloting or you can take it into your hand. And even if you put into the autopiloting, there are 3 GPS guiding me. And the airport also, I have the orientation, and 4 computers are filtering information. So I have to monitor the computers. The machine is autopiloting. So in the midday, he again took the machine into his hand, and there was a little jerk that usually passengers can't feel it. Now he says, now I can monitor. Otherwise, it is happening. So what I'm all going to say is, right from the takeoff, you are not putting into autopiloting. You have to take the situation under control as a beginner and let the meditation take the momentum. And when and where the mindfulness gain the momentum and gain certain amount of concentration, then only autopiloting can happen. That means you are not doing away with physical and verbal activities. You try to do away with volitional activities, do away with will, do away with monitoring, do away with regimentation and let it happen. So itself is a relief. But the thing is, we people think we are the governors, we are the owners, we are the executives, we are the people running the world. Then you mess up everything. Instead, let understand what the, how the world is running, and you try to understand, then you have to let the normal arising and passing away happening and observe it. So disciplinarians or people with the regimentation, they are always monitoring, always controlling. So therefore, even the situation is mature enough to put into the autopiloting, you are not ready. You are not giving it a chance. Then you can have the full freedom or full solitude or full maturity, full contentment, even for experimental basis. So under such circumstances, when you are monitoring, when you are regimenting, if it is going to happen, to listen to that or taken part in a discussion in an effective way, your progress will be more prominent in the discussion than in meditation. In the literal understanding than in meditation, because it gives a different combination. So therefore, while meditating, you have to discuss. While meditating, you have to listen. And let everything come together. Then only such an electric thing can happen. But don't take it to a wrong conclusion just to put everything autopiloting right from the beginning. Early part, never, you must be a beginner's mind. And after a certain amount of balancing, concentration only, you can go for autopiloting. And once that you started, it becomes habitual. It becomes catching the momentum. You understand, even in a society, or even when you are running an organization, wherever may be, let the society to run, let the organization to run, and if you are fully vigilant, fully diligent, you observe. And that will become very smooth. So that is how the good executives, good management techniques are happening. Not always forking fingers and monitoring and regimenting. That means you have no enough confidence. So meditation, not only teaching you meditation the management techniques, it teaches you communication. It teaches you first thing first kind of principles. So therefore, let it happen. Everything will be edited and refined. Believe on the mindfulness and continue it. Then it will take helm and do the best for you.
Dear Bhante, sir, yesterday in my sitting meditation, yesterday in sitting meditation, primary object, breathing in, breathing out. The breathing started normal, then it changed to a very long breathing, in and out. It was like if the body was getting full of air. I was able to see the breathing of the breaths into little ones, breaking of the breaths into little ones. In mindfulness, breathing out in the middle, the breath stops completely. Everything went black, the heart starting to pumping so fast. It was like running a marathon. And contemplate the heart and said, I contemplate the heart and said, I am prepared. Mindfulness, in fact, waiting for the breaks to appear. The heart went back slowly to the normal beating, and slowly and gentle the breath appears. In that darkness was emptiness and peace. I was just observing the process, and the bell rang to finish meditation. During the night, I wake up and immediately went back to breathing in and out meditation. It was like if the experience was waiting for the body. It took me again to the place of emptiness, silence that still remains. Two nights before, in sitting meditation, I saw the body like a patient in a life support, just breathing. No desires, nothing can disturb it. When I came to the retreat, I was not able to quiet the mind of the body, not even for 20 minutes. Now, after that experience, I think I can go for hours. After that experience, I feel like my brain and heart has been replaced. At moment, I feel like I will go to fail and need to sit down. Body and mind are empty. Please advise. Thank you. Metta.
Whenever you meet up with a heart attack, or serpent bite, or electric shock, if you can apply, this is the answer. If you get shocked, if you get upset, even the doctors can't rescue you. Main thing is let the body to play. The body knows everything. So heart attack is nothing so detrimental if you know not to worry. But the thing is very difficult to teach once you got heart attack how to learn not to worry. So it says even a serpent bite, even an electric shock, even a heart attack, even a kind of thing, your fear is the main culprit. So once you meditated, you know that more than your will, the body itself needs existence. It knows the complete knowledge. It is called Akash Library. Or it knows the cosmic knowledge. It knows. Unless otherwise you have four fingers, it happens normal. So therefore, whenever distraction, disturbance happen, just look at your breath. And of course, you see the marathon-like heartbeat and kind of thing. If you can observe, and quickly mind become at home, come back to the normal breathing. So I can remember when I am facing my comprehensive exam, not the comprehensive, it's called Viva, VOCA. That's met up with the board. So I went, of course, unprepared, because I was doing a job. And then they start asking, start asking the question, I know I become panicky. And so what I did was, without facing everything, I start just breathing in the front of the panel board, the board of examiners. Three breaths time, the mind felt like at home. I never felt like I am at an examination hall. Then I told, even without any technical knowledge, I can face. And exactly that happened. They asked detailed technical questions. I backed it normal knowledge and very relaxed. Soon after that, one of the examiners came and shook my hand, telling, after a long time, I see a person without much change tension. So I knew I am passed. So thing is, your mind is trying to be smart. So overreacting. Unless otherwise you have the prepared mindfulness. And that mindfulness also must be a pragmatic one, not for the sake of meditation, but for the day-to-day life. Then let him happen. And if you have this experience, that means you are preparing for the death. You are preparing for your old age. You are preparing for the diseases. So whenever disease happens, there's one particular sutta I can't remember in Sanghita Nikaya. The meditators get the enlightenment whenever they have fallen sick. That's the way the Buddha is presenting. You are using your technique when you've fallen sick, and you find it's a blessing in disguise. You can use, and then sickness is no more the sickness. It's a kind of a holiday for you. Otherwise, you can't lie and wait on the bed. When you become sick, you are confined to the bed, and mind also not disturbing, you can have a residential retreat on the bed. Intensive meditation. But the thing is, you can't train on the sick bed. Beforehand, you have to train it. And they are not direct results of the direct benefits of the mindfulness. They are byproducts. They become real valued or real significance when you apply into the day-to-day life. Then you are a pragmatic person. It is I am happy to say this dynamic part of my meditation happened as a layperson, not like a monk. That is why I am a happy monk. Even before going to the ordination, I know life is just a joke. Life is just a hobby, just to live. Don't try to show others or don't try to assume this and that. Just laugh it off. The main thing is not to worry. Even a serpent bite, no problem. So let that all mishaps to happen under the light of mindfulness, they become a blessing in disguise.
Dear sir, could you please elaborate on the point you made yesterday about as young practitioner, return to out normal life, it is safer to only share the fact that we are practitioners to our Dhamma friends. I see where you are coming from, and it is exactly the edge I have been walking on, and work in a large global organization. I try to share Buddha's teaching to people from security guards to group CEO by writing articles and giving speeches. I embed the teaching to business cases and share it in a human way rather than religious way. And I am not shy to share the fact that I meditate. But at times I am concerned about what in the long run what I am doing now may do to my career. Not that I'm afraid, but I want to avoid making mistakes that I can avoid. I would like to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
So I would like to quote His Holiness Dalai Lama. He is having a very big panel discussion with Oxford University scientists. And whenever he is presenting the quotation of the Buddha, he says, excuse me, please, I am going to put my Buddhist hat now. And then only he quote Buddha. Otherwise, he says, I am a part and parcel of the board. He just talk his human experience. Whenever he is quoting, he asks, please pardon me, I am not going to give a quotation. So, no harm. So you have to say, this is my background, my upbringing, it is a Buddhist. So you say, that is the way I learn it. But you present it in such a way, don't make a burden to others. Don't have any kind of missionary message. You just got it. So I listened to some of the discussions. He says, I'm sorry, now I'm going to put my Buddhist hat. And then he present Buddhism. Otherwise, he's a part and parcel of the board. So therefore, don't assume anything. You have your upbringing, you have your cultural traits, so you have to tell, this is the way it happens and this is the place where I am coming from, but I am not going to impose this to others. So in this juncture, I would like to take little attention from the Bhante, because back at home in Sri Lanka, I just want to introduce this mindfulness to the school children. So I have a long discussions, because I am a traditional Buddhist monk. Whenever I have to introduce mindfulness, should I present under the Buddhist hat or secular way? So ultimately, we decided to put it in a secular way, and now it is underway. We invite schools to come forward, and I am giving some essays just to read. Take 5 minutes of the day and just read it to the children and see how much they are gathering the idea, just the theoretical idea about the mindfulness. So my idea was to give that essay or give that reading 5 minutes a day, 4 weeks consecutively, Sunday, defining the mindfulness. Tuesday, if you happen to get a chance sitting, this is the way you have to practice mindfulness in sitting. And the Wednesday, while walking, how you apply mindfulness. On the Thursday, whenever in the day-to-day activities, brushing teeth and kind of thing, how to apply the mindfulness. Friday, the mindful games. So week after week, it is presenting and see how the children are responding in a secular way. And after about 8 weeks, I thought of taking 20 minutes in the classroom itself and give a practical hint. Just sit, close your eyes, and try to be here and now kind of thing. So I just wanted to get the Bhante's view also, and I am going to offer a book and ask him what is his experience. So it happened me to not to put my Buddhist hat and just write, how do I understand the mindfulness? Because 25% of the school children are non-Buddhist. So my idea is to see how can we present this in a secular way. So it's a new challenge for me. And I tested with some children, and I found that children still are not in a rut. They can just understand the mindfulness as such, without the religious background. So that particular person who is writing also, when you are talking, just talk to the humans, don't to the Buddhists, or don't to the religious people, just talk. And then you can see it's a huge vast area. If you know how to communicate, not to arouse this ism. So that is what I am telling. Don't try to impose others. Don't try to be a missionary way to others. But you can share your experience, just like His Holiness the Dalai Lama. You can put your Buddhist hat and say, and later you remove the Buddhist hat and be a Buddhist, be a normal human being. So that is the way I think the present day we have to share this mindfulness with all the fellow beings. Okay, I have taken about 5 minutes, otherwise we are time up on time today. And that is the end of the question. If you have any other thing to mention, it's okay, welcome. Otherwise, we are going to take time for walking meditation. Okay, no questions to the audience. So that indicates this is the end of our question and answer session. Thank you very much for the participation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.